Session number 29536, Mr. Bert Scriven's Reel 6. Now, you were telling me about this exercise where you were playing the role of an anti-tank rifle.
Yeah.
And you discussed then, how you were going to stop the armoured cars.
Yeah. Well, we had a brilliant idea. We decided that what we'd do, in theory, was cut the electric cable on the telegraph poles that ran alongside the road, take one end across to the other side of the road and attach them to the poles. Nobody said how we were going to do it. We were just going to do it, as it were. Then when an armoured car came along, we would be laying in the ditch alongside the road on each side. And when the armoured car would come along, we'd touch the live ends of the cables to the armoured car and electrocute everybody, which we thought was brilliant.
Did you actually do it?
No, we didn't actually do it. Nobody does anything on those. You just have the theory. Unfortunately, no umpire came along and asked us what we were up to. And, of course, we didn't cut the cable and we were just theorising. But what did happen was that at that time, for the first time ever, we were able to use blanks in Bren guns. Up to then, you couldn't, because there was nothing to propel the gases backwards to activate the firing blocks. But somebody had invented a wooden bullet which shredded when it was fired and was able to project the gases backwards and enable a Bren gun to fire. And very few people actually knew about this. So along came an armoured car and one of our Bren gunners opened up, which of course the armoured car people thought was a live gun, and promptly retreated backwards as fast as they possibly could. Victory to us in that case. That's about the general kind of thing that happened. And we stopped buses and had a chat with the passengers and asked for their identity cards and so on. Generally made a nuisance of ourselves. The result of the exercise, we never did know. What we were supposed to be doing, I don't know. I suppose we were repelling invaders, or perhaps we were the invaders. I would never know. But this sort of went on. We moved from Brooklyn to Lydd.
Whole battalion, or just your...
Our headquarters moved to Lydd. And then, in the late autumn, we moved to Harbledown.
Now, anything happened at Lydd before we go on?
Nothing in particular. It was a dead and alive place, and we didn't do any exercises that I knew about, still being in headquarters and so on. And we embussed, packed up, of course, and embussed, and went from there to Harbledown, just outside Canterbury.
How do you spell that? Sorry.
Harbledown, just in Harbledown Manor, just outside Canterbury on the London Road.
You went there in what?
That would be the autumn of 41. There, we only stayed a very short, half a minute. I've got that wrong. No, I'm sorry, we did not move to Harbledown Manor. We moved to Colchester. And we went into Kirkey Barracks, K-I-R-K-E-E, Kirkey Barracks in Colchester itself.
And
the edges.
Autumn.
Still autumn, yeah.
So you didn't go to Harbledon?
No, we had already been Harbledon long before. with the 9th Battalion. We went to Kirky Barracks. First time we'd been in a garrison town, and it was not a pleasant experience.
And what was the barracks like? What can you describe?
Barracks? Yes, they were a modern barracks. The militia type, as they were known then, which was from Hoare Bolitho, who was Secretary of War or something, he'd had them built. They were quite good, really. I was still with headquarters, still doing varying jobs, one of which was being in charge of the kitchens. In other words, I had to look after the kitchen, see they were operating well.
Tell me about that.
I used to inspect the ovens and go around and see that they got a stock pot cooking, which was a standard requirement of all army kitchens. See what they got in it, see what the meals were like. Something and nothing, really.
And what were they like? What was the quality of the food?
Oh, they were excellent. They were very modern kitchens. And they were very, very good. But this was the first time we'd been in an army barracks as such, and we'd forgotten, or never had known, that the Cardinal Sim was walking across the barrack square, for instance. I automatically did it on one occasion and had the RSM bellow at me to get out of the way and walk round the square, etc., etc. But I also proved that in the army, if one had a notebook and pencil, one could get away with almost anything. And for a bet, I went into the CO's office armed with just that, knocked on the door, walked in, saluted, said, "Excuse me, sir," pointed to light fittings and things like that, saluted again and said, "Thank you, sir," and walked out again, not having done anything, but just to prove that one could do it. I don't know why we did that kind of thing, but we did. I was also sent on a coaling party quite often.
Now, what was coaling
party? The coaling party was... It's a work party. We used to have to go to a coal dump and load up a lorry with it, bring it back, and various parts of the barracks were coal-fired. And some of the kitchens were. So we could never keep up with the demand for coal. Everybody wanted more and more. So I devised a way of... We had to go to the barracks weighbridge, weigh the lorry empty, go to the coal dump and load the lorry with coal, weigh it full, and then take it back to our barracks and distribute it, etc. And I devised a way of saying, well, we can get away with something like that. So I always weighed the empty lorry with a full working party of half a dozen men still aboard. And when we came out, the working party was off the lorry. So we got away with small amounts of coal. If you take that two or three times a day, it amounts to quite a lot. I did make the mistake of telling the quartermaster what I'd done. And I earned a reprimand for that. I shouldn't have told him, actually. He didn't want to know. However, those various kinds of things went on. We went on exercises up into Suffolk, mainly, testing the Home Guard. Now, they were a bit of a riot one way and another. We used to get on our lorries or whatever, be taken to a place, and you dug a slit trench and you stayed in it. The obvious aim of every one of our force, who we were the attacking, the enemy, was to get captured, because the Home Guard normally had a pub as their headquarters. And if you were captured, you were automatically taken to their headquarters and had a couple of days enjoying yourself. Not that I ever knew anybody who was captured, because I wasn't close to the infantry. All I do know is that the coldest part of any day is at first light, which is prior to dawn. That's horrible. And I learned how to dig slit trenches quite nicely, and how to sit in them for hours on end, doing nothing.
Were you disappointed to be back as a storeman, you know, after your brief period?
Yeah, but one learned to do as one was told. You had duties to do, so you did them. Well, no, I didn't try to go back to the rifle company. It was useless. I wouldn't get it in the first place. Records would always stop it. So I still stayed a technical storm.
Now, anything else happening at Kirky Barracks?
Kirky Barracks. Yeah, just behind us was a military prison. Open prison. They were mostly under canvas and so on. I was always sorry for the prisoners who were taken there. One used to see them coming along the barrack road with an escort, and the escort, being ordinary squaddies as it were, would often carry their kit bag or pack rifle or something like that, you know, to give them a hand, which always infuriated the red caps who ran the military prison. They used to bawl out the escort for carrying it, ensure that the equipment and such was restored to the prisoner, and the gates, which were barbed wire laced, had a line between the gatepost, a white line. The escort was then told, "You will tell the prisoner to quick march. As soon as he crosses that line, he is ours. You will have nothing more to do with him. You will report to the office and take a signature for him." And then the gates were opened, and the escort was instructed to march the prisoner forward, and as soon as his first foot crossed the line, he was told to double, and he was doubled up and down their main road until he was damn near exhausted, carrying full kit, which included kit bag, and then he was led off to the office for interview and quarters and so on. I was always sorry for those prisoners. One of their main duties, it appeared, was to carry buckets of cold water from here to there and dump them, and then pick up another two buckets and run them back to the first place and dump them and so on. Particularly useless stuff, but intended, of course, to exhaust the prisoner, as far as I could see. What other good it did, I don't know. But that was typical. But we stayed there for some months and did ordinary barrack duties, had evening leave and so on.
Would you go out for a drink?
Yeah, we'd go out for a drink because the place was full of soldiers all the time. The Americans, well, Canadians there, mainly. And there was also a prison hospital. Not a prison hospital, I'm sorry, military hospital that had people out on leave, dressed in hospital garb, which was a sort of a bright blue pajama, blue and red as I remember, pajamas and so on. Didn't see a lot of them. You're just mainly concerned with your own troops. Oh, we did have...
Was there any trouble in the town when you went around the pubs? No.
Everybody was pretty well behaved one way and another.
What would you do on a visit to Colchester? Would you go to pubs or would you go to the cinema?
We'd go to the cinema or we would go to a pub, wander around and so on. And just walk back again. There wasn't much to do. There was a garrison theatre, but that was some distance from us, and we very rarely got in if we went. A pretty dull life, one way and another. But.
Well, I should have asked you a bit more about the issue. I mean, were you in charge of issuing petrol? Because petrol was very tightly controlled, and that was your main job. How did you issue it? Was it different colours from.
Well, we had, it depended on where we were. A lot of it I didn't issue at all. When I was in the 9th Battalion, for a brief period, I was in charge of the petrol pump, and the lorries used to come in and fill up, and we used to log how much they used, or how much they put into their tanks, and submit that to the transport officer, who presumably used to log it against the lorries concerned and check the mileages. That's about all.
What did you actually do then as MT? If you weren't pumping it out, what did you do as MT, technical storeman, in charge of petrol?
Well, that was the only time I was ever in charge of petrol.
With the 8th, you were in charge of MT stores, and you said...
MT stores, yes, that was all the technical stores, all the bits and pieces that went to...
There's a misunderstanding, because when I asked you what MT stores were, you said it was petrol, or you
see... No, I didn't...
You must have misheard me then.
Yeah, it's not petrol.
What is MT stores?
MT stores are all the parts of engines and so on that... a battalion would need to repair their transport. Not complete engines, for instance. Small stuff, mainly. Emergency. In point of fact, I can't remember issuing very much at all there.
How did you carry it about? I mean,
we had lorries. The strange thing was that I didn't get involved too much in anything like that.
So what happens next then? You're at Colchester.
Well, we're at Colchester. We did these exercises and so on. It was rather like, when we went on exercise, it was rather like meeting Dad's army. In fact, it was exactly like that. I remember one time the quartermaster said to me, "Well, it's getting on for the end." This was Sunday afternoon. "We're going back to Colchester. You better come with me." Why, I don't know, but I did. And we didn't have maps with us. And, of course, all signposts and indications of where we were taken away from the roads. So we drove along the road that we thought we was going to Colchester. And then we saw... a company of Home Guard parading outside the village hall. It looked exactly like Dad's army, as one knows. They were all lining up and having a chuckle and waving to their girlfriends who were giggling up the road, as it were. So we pulled up alongside. Now, we were supposed to be the enemy, and we were in a little van with a divisional insignia, the brigade insignia and the battalion colours all on it, which told anybody who we were if they knew what they were looking at. And we stopped and said to them, "Are we on the right road for Colchester?" And they very kindly showed us a map and directed us the right way. And we said, thank you very much, and moved away. Well, we should have been arrested. But there we were, you know. Just like Dad's army. They hadn't a clue what they were doing or who we were. But they were very helpful, just the same. And we just went back to Colchester. But most of the time we were more concerned as the attackers, as it were. The rank and file didn't know what the hell they were doing. They were just told to go here, go there, dig a slit trench wherever, occupy it or march on somewhere else. That's all they knew. The person who knew least about what was going on was the bloke who was doing it. What happened next was I got married. February 1942. I had already arranged that on my 21st birthday to get married. Unfortunately, my 21st birthday, which was on the 21st of February, was in Lent. Now, in those days, one didn't get married in Lent. One couldn't get married in Lent. So it had to be put forward to the 14th, which was fortunately St. Valentine's Day. Now, that was interesting. I had leave. I had some clothing coupons issued by the battalion to get myself a pair of civilian shoes, which I was going to wear, contrary to orders, etc. And some pyjamas, which, of course, we didn't have. I went on leave.
Because some people delayed their marriages.
We were very fast. We met in 1941, as I've already said, at a battalion dance. In September, we became engaged. In February, we were getting married.
Even though you knew you were going overseas?
We knew we'd go sometime. We didn't know when, didn't know where, never would. The only place I could stay was with my wife's family, which I did. And my younger brother, who was an air cadet at the time, he was 15, 16. He was going to be my best man. Now, he made his way on his own from the station to the house, and we together decided to walk from South Ashford to Ashford town. We were married in St. Mary's Church in the centre of town. My sister, her little daughter of two, and my mother had to come in specially because it was a defence area. They had to be given special permission to come into town on a certain train that arrived about 11, I think, something like that. And they were allowed to stay till something around the 3 to 4 o'clock train, and they had to be on that. They were not allowed to stay in the area. Being under 21, of course, I had to have my parents' permission to be married. Anyway, my young brother and myself walked to town, and because we were getting married, I was getting married, and it didn't matter to him, I decided not to wear a respirator, which was against regulations. And as we walked up towards the church in Church Road, there was Red Cap's headquarters there, with the Red Cap standing on the door, and immediately he pulled us up and said, why weren't we wearing respirators? I said, well, I'm just going to church to get married. And he asked me if I was taking the effing Mickey out of him, etc., and wanted to run me in. I said, no, it's true, I'm getting married. And my young brother, being as cheeky as hell and not being governed by their discipline, started giving him a lot of lip, which nearly resulted in me being wheeled in. Finally, the only way I convinced him was to invite him to the church, which fortunately he didn't take up. And he let us off with a sort of caution, and we walked on to St Mary's Church. When we got in there, I discovered to my horror that my new shoes, which again he'd told me about, squeaked, both of them, in different keys. And all the way down the centre aisle, looking for the vicar or somebody, I was squeaking, much to my embarrassment. Finally found the vicar, who asked for the letter of permission to get married, which I gave to him, which had been sent by my mother, my father being somewhere, Midlands, I think, as aircraft factory inspector. The vicar asked for my letter of permission. As I said, my father was in the working somewhere in the Midlands as a government inspector. So she had written the letter of permission. I gave it to him, and he said, is your mother your next of kin? He said, how about your father? Have you got one? I said, oh, yeah, I've got one, but he's up in the Midlands somewhere. She said, I'm sorry, but this is not valid. It has to be your next of kin. So I said, there isn't a chance in hell. He said, well, I can't marry you. Anyway, he was very new and very young. I think it was his first appointment. Anyway, he asked me if I'd like to sign my father's name, and I said, I'm not forging his name for anything. So eventually we arrived at a compromise where I co-signed the letter using my father's initials, my handwriting, which was very useful later on in marriage, because I always used to tell my wife that we weren't officially married, much to her annoyance. I always told her it was all illegal. Anyway.
Why did you need the letter? Was it because of your age? Or
I was underage by a week. One had to be 21.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, it was. Everybody was very fussy in those days. Anyway, we were married, and you couldn't get photographers to attend a church those days. So, my wife and I had to go along the high street to a photographer's studio to get our photographs taken. Except one newsman. The local paper turned up and he took a photograph or two, so we did have that officially. We were lucky in that close to the church was a little restaurant that a lady she knew as, I'm not sure whether she was actually a relative, but she was known as Aunt something or other. She'd allowed us the upper floor of the restaurant for our wedding party, which was all of, I don't know, 6 or 8 or something like that. Couldn't get any more. And she had arranged a bit of a do for us, which went off very well. My mother and sister, brother and sister's daughter, of course, went off on the whatever it was in the afternoon train. And honeymoons were out because it was all a defence area and there was nowhere to go. So we just went back home. So much for the weddings and so on.